If it's in the quiet mode, it interferes with our sound equipment within these hearing rooms, and so it'd be helpful not to have that crackling going on in the background. Thank you very much for your assistance with that. We'll go then into the informational meeting, and our first witness will be Phil Ward, Director of the Water Resources Department.
Mr. Chair, before we get started, Phil, you can come on up. I just want to make apologies. Senator George asked to be excused. He's kind of fighting off the capital crud. I told him that it would be beneficial for all of us for him to take the evening off, hopefully get well, and be back in the trenches tomorrow.
Yep.
I know that Senator Beyer will be on his way. We just got out of our last committee, which was in this room until 5:03, and so I told him we'd be getting back at it around 5:15, 5:20, so I expect that he'll be here once he gets regrouped.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I see we have Richard Whitman, who came forward as well, who was also within our invited panel, and thank you very much for your attendance. So, gentlemen, we're in your hands.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, Phil Ward with the Water Resources Department, and I am glad that Richard's here to keep me on the straight and narrow this evening, Mr. Chair and members. Well, we appreciate the opportunity to be here for a bit tonight with you and talk a little bit about how your Water Resources Department manages the water resources of the state and how that interfaces with some of the things that you are considering under Ballot Measure 37. We've actually had quite extensive discussions about these issues this last week with Representative Girard, Representative Clem, in our budget hearings, where we've talked quite a bit about how this whole land use water interface impacts the Department of Resources, Water Resources, from a budget perspective. And Senator Schrader was noting that as we talked about earlier before the hearing. Generally, what I'd like to do, members, is lay out for a little bit about how we manage water and then talk specifically about some of the things that, as we understand, you've been talking about here in this committee. So I think the thing I'd like to open with is that, as a general rule, to use water in the state of Oregon, you need a permit from the Water Resources Department. And before we grant a permit for that activity, we do a review of basically four things to ascertain whether a permit to use water should be granted. One, we have to make a scientific determination of whether water is available. Is there water available in the resource to an additional user to use? Would granting a water right for a new use injure an existing and thereby senior user? So we have to determine, we have to make an affirmative determination that we won't injure a senior user by giving a new water right. And then a couple other kind of administrative pieces. Is issuing a water right permit of the nature that's being applied for consistent with our basin program, which is essentially the rules that guide how we manage water basin by basin? Each basin has some specific guidance in it for us. And then, are there any other rules of the Water Resources Commission that would prohibit granting such a water right? Again, if those criteria are not met, then we generally do not and cannot issue a water right. However, there is a significant exception to that process, and that's what we call exempt uses. So those are uses that are allowed under ORS 537 that don't require a permit from your Water Resources Department. And so those are generally domestic use and a half-acre lawn and garden use, those kind of things. And a water right or a water user can use up to 15,000 gallons a day under Oregon law under this exempt use statute. Again, we're limited to half an acre lawn, non-commercial lawn and garden. But that use is, I think, probably the type of use that you've heard concern about as you've heard the different issues that have come before this group during the session. The Water Resources Department and the Water Resources Commission does have the ability to impact exempt uses. And we do that in a couple ways. One, all wells that are drilled in the state, if we're talking about groundwater exempt use, all wells that are drilled require that a start card be submitted to our agency before they actually begin drilling the well. So if you're drilling a well, your driller is required to send us what's called a start card. Notice that that well's going in. And again, when the well is completed, we receive from that driller a well log, which describes the construction of the well and the nature of the resource. So we do have a handle on how many exempt wells are going in around the state. Additionally, if the need arises, we can regulate exempt wells in a couple ways. One, we regulate exempt uses regularly to make sure they're staying within the limits that an exempt use allows. So occasionally, as you can imagine, we'll find someone irrigating more than a half acre with an exempt use. And then our water masters have authority to restrict them back to that half acre if that's the case. We can also regulate exempt uses in favor of senior water right holders. So if I hold a senior water right and an exempt use next to me is found to be impacting my use, then the department can regulate the junior user in favor of the senior water right holder. Every well in the state gets what we call a priority date. So whether you have a permit from us or not, if you have a well, you have a priority date. And that is essentially the date that the well construction was completed. And so we can regulate in favor of senior users in all cases. A key piece to that regulatory activity, though, is that to do it, you have to establish really scientifically whether there's an impact underway. So we can't, based on conjecture or we have to have evidence before we regulate a well in favor of someone else. And you can understand why. We also can classify areas for the types of groundwater uses or other water uses that are allowed. So the commission can take action to say, in this particular geographic area, we're only allowing these types of uses from different sources of water. And then we can establish, and you have a map attached to your testimony, I believe, tonight, members, we can establish what we call groundwater restricted areas. And you see on that map, and I apologize for the type, it's small. This is taken from a much larger document. But we can establish areas where there are actually groundwater restrictions in place. And those range from groundwater limited areas to what we call critical groundwater areas. And we can limit any type of groundwater use in those areas. So let me leave that just for a minute and talk briefly about Measure 37 and the claims that have that the department has faced under Measure 37. And I just would note quickly for the committee, Mr. Chair, that the department has had 11 claims under Measure 37, largely when we have denied a water permit for some use that folks felt like they should have a use for. We have denied all 11 of those claims. Two of those, I believe, and Richard can correct me if he needs to, but I believe two of those have been appealed and are working their way through the legal process. I think Richard would tell us, and he may want to comment on this, that we've denied those based on the view that Water Resources Department regulations are not land use regulations, as identified under Measure 37, and that there's no inherent right to use water based solely on land ownership. Since 1909, water use has been a permitted activity here in the state of Oregon. One of the areas that we have that we are consistently receiving contact from counties and other local jurisdictions on is they're asking us to provide information about the state of the resource in areas where they're experiencing significant ballot Measure 37 claims. And so folks are asking, are there existing water rights? what can the resource bear in this area, and what we're attempting to do is provide as much factual information to notify counties if the area in question is in one of our groundwater restricted areas, so that the county has the best information that we can give them as they make their decisions. Again, Mr. Chair and members, we do not recommend to the county whether they approve or deny a land use action based on the water resource. Our hope is to provide them the best information that we can so they can make their land use decision based on the best information available. But in its most, and excuse me, I'm losing my voice here a little bit, in its most pure form, the water use activity, the availability of water does not determine whether a land use activity can occur or not. And let me just enlarge just for a moment on what I, my meaning there. Thank you very much. Water can be obtained from other sources to support a land use activity. So if a groundwater resource is not available to support a certain land use activity, if water is available from other areas, then certainly a county may want to consider that as they look at whether to approve or not a specific land use activity. Oftentimes we see developments connecting to municipal water supplies. Existing water rights may be transferred, purchased and transferred to a new property. So these are the kind of things that can that can be considered as a land use action is considered. In summary, Mr. Chair, and then I'd invite Richard, with your permission, to add a few thoughts. It is the department's view that Measure 37 will lead to additional groundwater development in parts of the state through the exempt uses that are available under Oregon law today. It is our view as well that the department does have tools to allow us to help manage these uses according to their impact on senior water rights. And then lastly, we're committed within the resources that we have available as an agency to get the best information we can to the local decision makers so they can make the most informed decisions possible as they consider these land use actions. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to conclude my testimony, be happy to answer any questions, but with your permission, Richard may have some things that he'd like to add at this point.
Very good. Mr. Whitman.
Thank you, Phil. Mr. Chair, for the record, Richard Whitman, Oregon Department of Justice, here tonight testifying with Oregon Water Resources Department. I do have a couple of comments I'd like to add just to flesh out a little bit more some of the points that Phil was making. This committee's heard a fair amount of testimony about the interplay between Measure 37 and water use concerns, and a lot of concerns from property owners around the state about possible effects of development under Measure 37 on existing uses of water. And so one of the things I'd like to comment on for the committee is just some cautionary words about the use of water regulation to control land use. And the first point to make is that, for the most part, property owners under our land use laws can proceed to divide property for development purposes without a showing that water is in fact available to be provided for the uses of those lots that are being divided off. So you can have situations where subdivisions occur without there necessarily being a showing that there is water available, either through a well or through a surface water source to serve those lots. The law does generally require a warning to purchasers of lots that there may not be water available for those, but they can be created for sale without that showing. The other thing I think I'll comment on is there's also been talk about the health and safety exemption under Measure 37, and doesn't that mean that water law still applies to development because water law is exempt under Measure 37? Well, to return to sort of a central point of Phil's, the main purpose of water law is to protect existing uses of water, to protect senior users. That's what the prior appropriation system is about. So it isn't, strictly speaking, a regulatory system that was set up to protect public health and safety. So, for instance, if you have a subdivision that's being created under Measure 37 and it's going in next to an existing irrigation district and there's concern about conflict between the new development and the existing irrigation use, well, that regulation under the water law to protect the water rights of the irrigation district is a regulation to protect existing property rights. It's not really a regulation to protect public health and safety. So in advising the state on these issues, we've generally shied away from relying on that health and safety exemption in the water rights context. So those are just two quick points I wanted to make that I think are pertinent for your consideration in this area. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen. Are there questions for Mr. Ward or Mr. Whitman? Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had two, I think. One, how old is this system of prior appropriation? When are those laws? So just in case they are determined to be land use decisions somewhere in court, I'd like to know where those began.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the prior appropriation system began in Oregon with the initiation of the Water Code in 1909, which impacted all surface water appropriation in the state. Our groundwater code came into existence in 1955, if my recollection's correct. So those are the two key pieces. The code initiated with surface water in 1909 encompassed groundwater beginning 1955.
And with your permission, Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, in addition, under case law from the U.S. Supreme Court in this case, in terms of property rights, landowners who own land don't also own the right to use water. Water is owned by the state of Oregon, not only the state of Oregon, but all states, and it's subject to being used through a prior appropriation or permit system. So the point I'm trying to make here is that even before those statutes were in place in 1909 and 1955, that we have advised that a landowner does not have a property right to use water under Measure 37 that would allow them to go back, unless they could somehow go back before statehood. So,
Mr. Clem, did you have a second question?
One more. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this, listening to everything you've said, I kind of want to see if I can apply it to some testimony we heard to see if I understand how this could have happened. There was a gentleman who was in here talking about his claim, and I think he had a couple waivers, maybe didn't have a building permit yet, but said he had dug two wells already, I believe. And so in this system, possibly were exempt wells, and they didn't interfere with because exempt wells even can be regulated if they interfere with an existing more senior water right user, or the resources of the department aren't strong enough to catch a situation like that, or would that be caught under the issuing of a notification that the well's going to be dug?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think in the situation you described very well, the probability is that exempt wells were drilled, and indeed those wells may or may not have been utilized yet, so there may or may not have been an impact on any surrounding users. It's been our experience over time that existing water users are very helpful in making sure that we know if they feel like they're being impacted by a neighbor. So in situations of the nature that you described, quite often we get quite a lot of help in making sure that we have a water master out there checking the situation.
One last one, okay. I promise.
Go ahead, Representative.
Do you think it's fair to say that a scenario, something like this might happen, somebody who's been in here and talked about having spent a few hundred thousand dollars moves forward through, they've got their waivers, they've spent a bunch of money, they're under the belief that incorrectly that the ballot measure is going to allow them all those exempt wells, and that your agency may very well come in and say, if you really do 50 of those, you're going to interfere with senior rights, no, denied, and then you're going to get sued, and we'll be back to whether your decision was a land use decision. Do you see that coming? Because I sure do.
Mr. Chairman, and again, Representative and Richard, you can correct me here if need be, but I think the most likely scenario would be, and perhaps even more difficult, would be a situation where wells were put in place and were ultimately shown after they were in place to be impacting senior users, and then those wells would be regulated back in favor of the senior users. We have actually, in different parts of the state, have had to do that at times to regulate some exempt uses back because they were found to be impacting either senior exempt uses or other commercial irrigation type of uses. So we have had the scenario happen after the impact has actually occurred where those wells were regulated.
Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Phil, I'm going to ask the same question I asked in Ways and Means to set the scenario. If we were to exempt water from Measure 37 and we left the decision as to the questions regarding water to the local government, planning commission, county commissioners, whomever, and they would immediately call your department and ask for a groundwater assessment, tell us how much water is where they want to build. How much money do you have in your department to do that? And am I setting you up nicely for that, I might add?
Mr. Chair, Representative, so as I follow your question, you're talking about what's our capacity to investigate specific requests by local governments as to the nature of the resource.
Yes, sir.
First, Representative, I'd say that where we have information available that we can readily make available, we will do that upon request. But if information needs to be developed, new information needs developed, we have, I would characterize it as a limited capacity for undertaking that. And in past years, we did have a significant budget. It was up to $800,000 a biennium to do partnering groundwater investigation studies around the state. That, in this last 6 or 8 years, that money has gone the way of the budget cut process, and so those funds are no longer available. We will attempt to help any jurisdiction within the limits of our resources, but those are limited resources. Yes, sir.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
So if for some reason we kind of open the gate on 37 claims of some kind, you've got 7,000 of them out there. Not that you would have that many requests all at once, but you could easily have 1,000 requests at one time. Can your department, with no budget, handle groundwater assessment?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I certainly, again, we may have information relating to the nature of the resource in many of those areas today, and we'll provide that very willingly. But for us to engage in groundwater research is very detailed work. For us to engage in a tremendous new effort, we probably could not do a tremendous amount given the resources we have today.
Thank you.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Phil, we got a letter here from Orchard Crest Farms, and talking about exempt wells, and they said they did some studying on 150 some odd wells in their area, Eloah Hills area, and whereas exempt wells are allowed to use 15,000 gallons per day, or is it and or?
Up to
a half inch or half acre of lawn. I'm not sure if it's and or, but whatever it is. Anyway, so their research showed that on average, wintertime usage was 200 gallons per day per well, and summertime usage 600 gallons per day per well. I just wondered if you guys have any information. I know what the statute says is an exempt well and what's allowed, but do you guys have any information on you know, what is really used in a household on average?
Mr. Chair and Senator, we would agree that most exempt uses are using nowhere near 15,000 gallons a day, which is the limit in statute. In fact, it's our view that was originally that limit. Most Western states allow up to 5,000 gallons a day for exempt wells. I think the thinking behind the 15,000 gallon limit in Oregon related to the fact that it was an encouragement to put multiple users on one well so that we weren't drilling more wells than we needed to in an area. And while that's not specified in statute, from the history we've been able to gather, that seems to be the indication, and it makes sense. It would be our view that in-house use is going to be more of the nature of what you described, a few hundred gallons a day, depending on how many teenagers you have in the house, Senator. And that would be additive. If you're doing a half acre of lawn and garden, you could be up in the couple thousand gallons a day area, perhaps, but certainly much less than the 15,000 gallons allowed by statute. Yes, sir.
And just to follow up, Mr. Chair, I haven't done the math quickly, but let's assume if you were to put 15,000 gallons of water onto half an acre in a day, I mean, how many feet of water would that be?
I don't have my conversion chart with me at the moment, Mr. Chair, Senator, but it would probably not be characterized as beneficial use under Oregon law.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Przanski.
Based on your testimony, I want to just get some clarification. And I guess what I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that just because you own land, that doesn't mean that you have the right to groundwater or to surface water.
Chair McPherson and Co-Chair Przanski, that's correct. And that, again, that comes from a U.S. Supreme Court decision actually involving the state of Oregon in terms of what the federal government granted to each state at statehood. And what that Supreme Court case says is that at statehood, the federal government granted to each state, among other things, the water in each state. And it was up to each state to then by law in that state dole out the water to users of the water. So it's different than the whole land system. And because of that, I think that explains why out of roughly 7,000 claims under Measure 37 the state has received, there have been only 11 directed at the Water Resources Department. So it's actually been a relatively small, very small number of claims on Measure 37 for water resources.
One follow-up. This goes to the part which we've heard a lot of testimony on, the public health and safety exemption in Measure 37. So does that mean that the government can or can't regulate the use of water without taking in regard Measure 37? And I'm just trying to understand what I think I heard the testimony tonight was that they're independent, they're safe from each other, and one cannot just rely on the public health and safety exemption to control the use of water as it pertains to a Measure 37 claim?
Yeah, and again, this was part of my earlier statement about cautioning the committee in terms of the ability of the state to control land use development under Measure 37 using water law. And there are a couple reasons for that. One of the reasons is we don't believe the health and safety exemption would necessarily apply to water law, because water law is directed at protecting senior uses of water, not at protecting public health and safety. Mm-hmm. There may be other, you know, the building code is directed at health and safety, so there may be parts of the building code that require a certain type of water supply be available before you can build anything. Those might be covered, but water regulation itself under the water code wouldn't be covered.
Okay. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to make a clarification, because on the development side, when after you've got your Measure 37 claim and you go to get your development permit, they always require at the local level that you have to provide water. That's, you have to go to the water district or whatever and have them sign off that water is available. You have to have fire protection.
If I can, Chair McPherson, Representative Smith, that's generally a requirement. It's a requirement that comes in under the Uniform Building Code, as I mentioned just a second ago. Right. And so it would be a requirement before you can build anything.
Right.
But in my earlier remarks, I was talking about the ability of a landowner under Measure 37 to get, obtain the rights to divide property and sell lots. You can do that without water. It's true that you can't build without a showing that water is available, but you can divide and sell without that showing.
Thank you for the clarification.
So I wanted just to clarify what I think I'm hearing. That water is not a right that attaches to the land, and therefore anything that regulates its use to in order to protect senior users wouldn't be a land use restriction. Do I have that understanding clear enough?
Chair McPherson, not quite.
Please.
So let me try to clarify this. What we're advising is that the ownership interest that the landowner has does not include the right to use water. And because of that, they can't file a Measure 37 claim because they can't show that they have a property interest that has been restricted because they don't have the ownership in the first place. So it's not that water law is exempt from Measure 37. It's that there's a problem in terms of the ownership interest that the landowner has. Now, obviously, if a landowner has a water right certificate from the state, the state has granted them a property right under our water code. And so if we were then to come back and try to further regulate that water right that somebody had under the state permit system, then we'd be into a Measure 37 claim. I seem to have confused you.
Well, yeah, probably easily confused. If I understand, the water rights are a question of first in right, and so the whenever there's a limitation on the total resource, then it's the more senior user that's protected, and more junior users then are restricted in their use. So if any requirement of, you know, reduction of draw out of a stream or out of groundwater were applied, it seems like it would follow from what you said before, as though that restriction would not itself be a land use restriction. That is, somebody couldn't claim that had reduced the value of their property because they can't get as much water as they'd like to have. That would be not a valid Measure 37 claim, but maybe that's something that needs to be clarified about the measure.
Chair McPherson, what you just said is generally correct. There are, however, some state laws that authorize regulation, not strictly speaking by priority date, but under certain circumstances based on other factors, and that would be the main area where we would have some concern about the application of Measure 37.
Any other questions from the committee? Very good. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. It was a very helpful presentation. Concludes the invited testimony we have for this evening. This is obviously a very important aspect of of the whole complex of issues that surrounds the implementation of Measure 37. So I appreciate our witnesses, and I appreciate the committee's attendance to hear this important input. For Thursday, we will not be holding a meeting of the committee for this coming Thursday. And that notice will be, I think, posted here shortly. But no meeting for Thursday. And at this point, watch the calendar for the following Tuesday. We may well have a meeting then, but that will be decided a few days from now. Thank you very much. The committee is adjourned.